Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Saturday, August 18th, 2001. In the Village Center this evening is Catherine Cummings Bond. Today's session number is MU-2001-11. Let's listen in.
Good evening. Tonight, we are going to have the privilege of hearing the story of Harriet Tubman. She didn't look a lot like me at all. She looked like this picture, this poster down in front. She was an African-American or a Negro slave, which were the words of the day. But before we begin with her, as people are trickling in, I want to play a song for you by a woman from the Midwest, and her name is Ann Reed, and the song is called Heroes. It talks about the fact that one person can change, it takes one person to be a hero, and then it names a list of people, and I want you to, as you hear their names, count how many of them that you know. Okay, sound man.
What can I learn from you? Your lifetime, what you've been through, how'd you keep your head up and hold your pride? In an insane world, how'd you keep on trying? One life can tell the tale. If you make the effort, you cannot fail. By your life, you tell me it can be done. By your life's the courage to carry on. Heroes, here like a friend, to clear a path or light. What can I learn from you? That I must do the thing I think I cannot do. That you do what's right by your heart and soul. It's the imperfections that make us whole. One life can tell the tale, but if you make effort, you cannot fail. By your life, you tell me it can be done. By your life's the courage to carry on. Heroes appear like a friend to clear a path on light. Sojourner Truth, Eleanor Roosevelt, Katharine Hepburn, Sally Ride, Susan B. Anthony, Harriet Tubman, Annie Sullivan, Gertrude Stein, Coretta Scott King, Amelia Earhart, Lillian Hellman, Eartha Kitt, Sacagawea, Ella Fitzgerald, Golda Meir, Dorothy Dix, Louisa May Alcott, Billie Jean King, Emily Dickinson, Lucy Stone, Margaret Sanger, Clara Barton, Billie Holiday, Juliette Lowe, Elizabeth Blackwell, Rosa Parks, Dina Horn, Beverly Sills, Barbara Jordan, Helen Keller, and Tira Gandhi, Agnes DeMille, Cora Zanacchino, Gloria Steinem, Rachel Carson, Joan of Arc, Babe Zaharias, Marlene Dietrich, and Frank Simone de Beauvoir.
I was in a CD store in Seattle one day, and I heard that song, and I just broke into tears. I had never heard a song about heroes and women's names after it. Just to hear those women's names, one after another, and I didn't know who all of them were at the time. How many of you got all 40 right? How many knew all 40? Okay, how many got 30 of those? Great! And how about 20? And how many knew who 10 of them were? That's a great start. This week, if you are staying through the week, you will hear me do tonight Harriet Tubman, tomorrow night Helen Keller, then Sojourner Truth, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Florence Nightingale. Tonight is one, I think, I love Harriet and I love Sojourner both, because they are the slave women who had such a difficult life. I mean, there's nothing we can do in our life that will ever begin to match how difficult their lives were. So what I love about their stories are that no matter what you are facing when you go home, it will not be nearly as difficult as these two women and what they did. So I believe these stories empower us to be all that we're meant to be. Tonight, my daughter, Bryn, who's 15, will tell you Harriet Tubman's story as a child, and then I will finish it as an adult. At the end, we will stay in character and we'll answer your questions about Harriet, or Harriet as a child. So, Bryn.
Good evening. My name is Minty. I was born in 1820, or 1822. I'm not quite sure, and I'll tell you why. It's because in those days, they believed that slaves' births weren't important enough to be recorded. So I was never quite sure when my birthday was, although I had a pretty good idea how old I was. I was born by the Chesapeake Bay, which is very close to what you know now as Washington, D.C. I was also born on the Brodus Plantation, where my mother, Old Rit, and my father, Daddy Ben, raised me. Before the age of 6, I was a careless child, and I could do anything I wanted pretty much. But when I turned 6 years old, I was officially a slave. And my job was to bring water to the field hands and attend to the small corn and grain. When I was about 8, I got sold out for the first time. And this means that a white man consulted with my master, another white man, and bought me for money like a piece of furniture. And I had no choice but to go with him, to go to his house and do what he told me to. So when I was 8 years old, I said goodbye to my family and my parents, and I knew that there was a good chance I'd never see them again. I went home with Mr. Cook, and he introduced me to his wife, Mrs. Cook, and they told me that my job was to every day go out to the water, they lived on the water, and I was supposed to empty the muskrat traps. And the muskrats would swim into these traps and they would be unable to get out. And my job was to open it and pull them out, and I was supposed to put them in a big burlap sack by the tail. But I never did it. I never came home with one muskrat. And it's because I knew what it was like to be a slave, and I could never enslave anything else, not even a muskrat. So I always came home empty-handed, and I was punished for that, severely punished for that. After a while of waiting in the water, I got very sick, both because I wasn't fed very well and because the water was cold and I was young. Three things, actually. Anyways, I got sick and I told my master that I was sick. And he said, oh, slaves always say that to get out of work. And so they told me that I was faking being sick. And so when I slowed down or did anything out of the ordinary, they beat me. After a while, they realized that I truly was sick. And the only option they had was to send me back to the Brodus Plantation, or surely I would die. So they did. They sent me back to the Brodus Plantation, where my mother and father nursed me back to health. It took 6 weeks before I was well again, and when I was, and up and playing and doing my original chores around the Brotus plantation, they sent me back for a second time to the same family. But this time, Mrs. Cook tried to keep me inside and teach me how to do household chores. But I didn't want to learn. So I'd throw the thread on the floor or drop the flour or whatever to frustrate her. And it worked. She sent me back to the Brotus plantation a second time. But this time they told me that I was worthless and I would never amount to anything. And Mr. Brotus would be better off just selling me down south because they're meaner to the slaves down south. But I knew better. I knew one day I'd be somebody special. I knew that I was somebody special. When I was about 10 years old, I was sold out a third time, but this time to a different lady. Her name was Miss Susan, and she had a baby, and my job was to take care of the baby. I'd sit on the floor and I'd rock the baby back and forth, and if the baby got upset, I was punished. I slept by the baby, and I learned how to sleep without sleeping. I learned how to be awake and hear every move that baby made, but be asleep and dream and nod like any other sleeping child. Little did I know that this would help me a great deal in the future. One day, Miss Susan asked me to help her set the table. She asked me to put the sugar lumps on. In those days, they were lumps as opposed to cubes like we have today. And I put them on, but it was very rare that I got to taste sugar. It was only about once a year around Christmas. My mom would make a pie or something. And it was very rare, and I wanted so badly to taste one of those lumps. So I stuck my fingers and I plopped one in my mouth, and I hoped that she didn't see. But she did, and she told me to go outside and wait for a beating. So I went outside and I waited, but when she came out, I knew that I couldn't stand there again. I knew that I couldn't stand there and let her beat me again. And so I ran. I took off like a bullet. I ran so fast that my legs should have fallen off, but they didn't. It must have been 5 miles before I reached a barn. In the barn was fresh hay for me to sleep on, and there was slop that the pigs got, and it wasn't any worse than what I had eaten my whole life, which was pretty much table scraps. Anyways, I fought off the pigs and I ate their scraps, but after a couple days, I knew that my only chance to survive was to go back to Miss Susan's. And so I did, even though I knew and suffered the consequences.
Well, Minty was my basket name. And a basket name is something they give you when you are a child and you're still in a basket, a baby basket. But when you grew up, you got a name. And I'll tell you how I got my name. One time, I was about 13 years old, and I was at the corn shucking contest. Now, what happened was all these plantations would get together, and we would all come together into one plantation, and there would be a contest. And that would be to see whose slaves could shuck the most corn. Now, you know, shucking is just where you pull it off. Well, I love these gatherings because I like to study the other people. And I'd heard some talk about the Underground Railroad. You knew what that was, or most of you do, that it wasn't a railroad at all. It was a form of movement from slaves from the south to the north. And the way that the slaves got there was they would have kind, usually Christian people, often Quakers, and what they would do is they would harbor the slaves or hide them by day, sometimes in potato bins, sometimes in attics, and by night, slaves would run. Well, I'd heard stories about it, but whenever anyone talked about the Underground Railroad, they would whisper. And I never knew why, except that one time my daddy said, if the whites heard you talking about the Underground Railroad, that you would get punished. But at these gatherings, I would look at people and I would wonder, are they one of the ones that might run on the Underground Railroad? And I saw a man this day that looked to me like one that had the nerve, that had the courage to do it. So I went and stood next to him and I said something like, have you heard of the railroad? And he looked at me. And I just stood next to him, I don't know, hoping that maybe I'd get the courage just to stand next to him, that I might be able to do something someday too. And all of a sudden, someone was weighing something up front, and people were shouting for the slaves, and this slave had got 10 pounds. So the man was putting a 2-pound weight on, and the man next to me, that I thought would be one that might run, took off running. The man with the weight took it and hurled it at him, and rather than hitting the man that was running, he hit me right in the forehead, right here. 13-year-old girl hit with a 2-pound weight coming at me. I went down. My head was gushing blood. My mom came running up to me, and she picked me up. She was sobbing and weeping, and they took me back to the slave quarters. In the slave quarters, we slept on pallets, and they had straw on them, and there was an old quilt thrown over them. We would sleep on there kind of like a pile of puppies. Well, my mom put me down, and she thought for sure I would die. People had died from less of a blow than that, and I didn't die. I lay there for weeks, coming in and out of consciousness. Sometimes I would wake up, and I would see a whole crowd of elders from the slave quarters standing around me praying and saying, God, heal her and help her not to die, keep her. Well, I didn't die, but I did learn when I was awake one of those times that my master, Mr. Brodus, was going to sell me when I was sick and almost unconscious. Well, I began praying that he might have a change of heart, and then after I prayed for that for a couple days, I prayed that he just might die, because I'd had it. So I laid there in my bed, in and out of consciousness, praying that he would die, and this happened. Coming down the streets of the slave quarters, one woman was yelling, "You're not going to believe it! You're not going to believe it! Mr. Brodus is dead!" And I had thought that my prayers had caused Mr. Brodus to die. Well, this was great news for the slaves, because we had been promised if Mr. Brodus died, we would go free. Well, it wasn't the first time a black person had been lied to by a white person, because we were not set free at all. In fact, we had a new owner, and this new owner was a preacher man, so we thought for sure life was going to be good. But we learned that not all preacher men are trustworthy either. Actually, life under him was much worse. Well, when I finally came to and I was awake, the elders of the community thought that I was someone that God had touched, that God had chosen, and so they named me Harriet. And that was my name, Harriet. And then they sent me out to work with my pop. My papa, old Daddy Ritt, was a lovely man. You would have liked him very much. He could work like three men put together. And he taught me at 12 years old how to split a cord of wood in a day. How many of you can do that? Split a cord of a wood in a day. Well, I could do it, no problem. And so they sold us across the street to another slave owners. And it was over there that my pa really educated me. We were alone. There wasn't a lot of overseers watching over us. And he taught me things I would learn and that I would need to know later. Things like how to walk on dried leaves and not to make a sound. And he taught me how to know which way was north when I was going on the railroad. He said, you look up there at the drinking gourd. And the drinking gourd is what we were out in the fields we would drink water out of. And it was just an old hollowed out gourd, but we called it the drinking gourd, and we wrote some songs about it. I bet you've heard one or two. Well, I said to Pa, Pa, what happens if I can't see the sky at night and the clouds are there? He said, well, come over here, Harriet. He called me Hat. Come over here, Hat. Feel on this tree. If you feel on a tree, the north side of the tree has moss on it. So if it was dark outside, you just feel for a tree and you head towards the way the moss is. Well, I thought, I'm going to do this. Someday, I'm going to run for my freedom, just like that man did at the corn shucking contest. Well, I became quite strong. In fact, I was so strong when I was 14 years old that my owner used to bring his friends down when they come for dinner, and he would hook me up with like a mule to this big raft full of stones. It was very heavy, weighing hundreds and hundreds of pounds. He would hook me up to this barge, and he would have me pull it along the side. At first, I was very pleased that he would want to show me off to his friends. And then I thought, he's treating me just like an animal. But I kept pulling. I kept being as good a slave as I knew how. Well, about the time I was 17 or 18, there was a man came in my life whose name was John Tubman. Being in love was a strange, tender feeling. And what happened when you fell in love as a slave was you began to make a quilt. Now, I would work out in the fields, splitting wood or doing some sort of manual labor for about 12 to 14 hours a day. Then I would come home at night and I would sit down with this quilt, and my mama would give me the needle and thread, and she would say, "Now, Harriet, you have 3 hours to work on your quilt tonight." I would much rather have been out splitting wood than sitting in front of that fire, getting little tiny stitches up and down and up and down. But this is what you made the man you loved. So, I love John Tubman. John Tubman said he reminded me of a tall, well-built man who had a clear laugh. Well, I married him, and for my wedding present, I gave him this quilt that I'd spent 2 years making. It wasn't that good, but it was as good as I could quilt. We went to his house. He was a freed slave. He didn't live with the rest of the slaves in the slave quarters. He lived by himself. One of the first couple nights we were together alone, I told him, "John Tubman, someday I'm going to escape from my freedom and I'm going to be free like you." And he told me the strangest thing. He said to me, "If you run away, you take off, I'll go and tell your master and I'll tell him right quick." You know, I'd been beaten as a child. I'd been hurt by many people, but I never had anything hurt me like that. My own husband told me that he would betray me if I ever did what my heart longed to do, which was to be free. And so, from then on, I kept having the same dreams. I kept wanting to do the same things. I just became afraid of my husband. I didn't tell him. When I was out in the fields working with my brothers, I told them, and they said, "Oh, Hat, we'll go with you. We'll sneak off and go with you. That's a great idea. We'll help you, Harriet. That'll be wonderful." So one night, we got up, and I put some pork from the night before dinner, I put it in a kerchief, and I put some old stale bread, and I snuck out of bed. John didn't hear a thing, and I crept out. There were my brothers, and we got down, and we started walking, and we heard some dogs, and my brother said, "What's that? What's that sound? Oh my gosh, that's the dogs. They're coming after us, Harriet. They're coming after us. I'm scared, Harriet." I took about 2 hours of that. And then I discovered, who needs these brothers? So I said, "I think we just better go on back." And they said, "Oh, good idea, Harriet. We were afraid, Harriet." And I learned, just because you're a man doesn't mean that you're brave. So they went back to their home. I went back to my bed. John never knew I was gone. About 2 weeks later, I got up by myself. And I remembered a woman who was a white woman. I'd never had a white woman be nice to me before in my whole life. But one time when I was working in the field, she kept driving by on her horse and her buggy in this faded sunbonnet tied underneath her head. And one time she came to me and she said, "Aren't you Harriet Tubman?" And I said, "Yes, I am, ma'am." And she said, "I want to tell you where I live." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And she told me explicit directions on how to get to her house, how to look for something in the field, and how to find exactly her house. And she said, "If you ever need to, you could come and find me." "Yes, ma'am," I said. "Thank you, ma'am." I didn't know what this meant, but that was the first place I was going to go. So I got up in the middle of the night all by myself. I put the pork into my pocket, and I picked up this quilt. It was the most beautiful thing I'd ever had. And I took it with me because I thought, if I win my freedom, I want to give someone something to thank them for my freedom. So I got to the house. It took me most of the night, and it was beginning to get light, and I knocked on the door. There was a candle in the window, a lot like this candle. And when I got to the door, the woman said, "Who is it?" I said, "It's Harriet Tubman." She opened the door and she said, "What took you so long?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, welcome to the Underground Railroad." I said, "This is it?" And she said, "That's why I told you all the times to come here. You'd be free." And then she did the craziest thing. She said, "Why don't you sit here at my table and eat this breakfast?" Well, I'd never sat at a white person's table and eaten anything. And I sat down and I ate the whole breakfast, and she said, "Now you go sleep in my bed. And then when you wake up tonight, you'll be ready to run, and I'll tell you where to go next." I'd never slept in a proper bed all by myself, ever in my life. So I lay down, I went to sleep so fast. Well, I could tell you stories until tomorrow morning about the Underground Railroad. I took 19 trips back down. When I finally got to Philadelphia, I knew I was free. But I went back 19 different times to get my family, to get my parents. Once I went after John Tubman, and I brought back with me 300 slaves. There are so many stories. One time we hid in an attic of some Quakers for 1 week. One time I came up to a house, and the woman, she saw me coming up, and she knew who I was. But she gave me this broom, and she said, "Now start sweeping and act like my slave." So I kept sweeping, and a man came up on his horse. He got off, and he just didn't even pay any attention to me at all. But he walked up and said, "We hear that there's some runaway slaves in this area. If you see them, you be sure to tell us." And the white woman said, "Yes, sir, I will. Oh, yes, I will. I will." And I just kept sweeping and looking down and sweeping. There are stories, so many stories. One of my favorites was this. I used to go to a house, and they grew wonderful vegetables. And they would feed us. We were hungry. Sometimes it'd be days before we could eat. But this one house, we always had great vegetables. And the one man said to his wife, "Honey, I think it's time we take the vegetables to town." She said, "Why don't we take Harriet with us tonight?" "Good idea." So they put me down in the middle of this cart, and they put around me pumpkins, and then they put around me potatoes, and then they put around me eggplant and tomatoes, and all of a sudden you could see nothing but just a little slit for my eyes. And I rode in that cart for 14 miles into town, and no one knew I was in there. There were times when we were hiding in blackberry brambles, and we would keep in our pockets, pepper, because that would keep the dogs off and they wouldn't know where to go. I did go back one time for John Tubman, and I'll tell you that story. Even though he had greatly disappointed me and had really betrayed me, I went back for him. And I got outside our house, and my heart was pounding, and I knocked on the door. And he came to the door, and he said, "Harriet Tubman, I haven't seen you in over a year." And I looked inside, and by the fire I saw another woman, a young woman, a beautiful woman, much prettier than I. And I said, "Who's that in there?" He said, "This is my new wife." I said, "Oh, well," and it was just that quick. I said, "That I came to take you and your new wife to freedom." And he began laughing. He laughed at me. And I looked at him and I said, "Goodbye, John Tubman." And I turned around and I walked away. And although it hurt, like nothing I had ever had hurt in my whole life, that was my heart breaking. I decided from that moment on, my new husband was going to be God. And that I was going to try my best to get as many people freed as possible. When I would come back to Maryland, back to the plantation where I was, I would sing. We couldn't sing "Go Down Moses" because they outlawed that song because it scared the white folks so much that maybe all the slaves were going to run away. But I would make the sound of a whippoorwill, and they would know that it was me, and they would come, and I would take them little by little. One time I took two baby twins with me, and they were being so loud and wild at night that I just gave them a little bit of my whiskey. And that knocked them right out. They slept through the night, and we got through. One time, I came back after my parents. My parents were old. They were in their 70s, and I knew they couldn't run like I did. You know, we didn't have shoes. We would just wrap around our feet rags. Sometimes we'd have one good shoe, or if there were two shoes, we would share them with each other. But there was a man in Philadelphia. That man in Philadelphia, if you got to him and you were a slave, he would make you a new pair of shoes. He was a white man. His name was Mr. Garrett, and he was one of my favorites. And I would bring in a group of six or seven slaves, and he would say, "Harriet Tubman, it's a miracle that you got through again." And he would give them all shoes made for their very own feet. Well, I was wearing a pair of those shoes, and I went back down to my parents. I'd gone back to their house many times, but they never saw me because my pa said he didn't want to have to lie. If they said, "Have you seen your daughter, Harriet Tubman?" my pa wanted to say, "I haven't seen her." So they would bring me food, but they would never look at me. They would just hand me the food with their eyes closed. But this time I came down and I borrowed a wagon from my friends because I knew that my parents couldn't walk that. So I got him on the wagon and I dressed up like an old lady. And I put the kerchief down around me and I got some chickens and I put them in the back of the cart and they were wild and they were jumping up and down and they were making squawking noises. And all of a sudden, who walked in front of my cart but Mr. Brodus, of all people, the man who said he would pay $40,000 to have me back, dead or alive. I hear tell that's worth about $1 million in your money today. But this man walked in front of me, and I put my head down like an old woman would, and my ma and pa, they put their heads down, and the chickens kept squawking, and we walked right by as if we were invisible. I mean, we drove right by. Well, there are so many stories I could tell you. But let me tell you what was happening during that time in history. Around this time, you've heard of a man. His name was Abraham Lincoln. How many of you heard of Abraham Lincoln? Well, he was a hero of all of ours. In the winter of 1858, I went to Boston to raise money. I went to a place called Faneuil Hall. I bet some of you have been there too. I stood on a podium like this with all white men, and they said I was Harriet Tubman. I just stood up for the first time, and they began clapping. And they said, "Tell us some stories, Harriet, tell us stories." So I just began telling one or two stories. A couple hours passed, and by the time it was over, the people stood to their feet and they started clapping and they started hooting and hollering, and I guess I'd done pretty good. From then on, I was a well-known speaker in many churches and they wanted me to come to help raise money. Well, when I would tell stories like about the Underground Railroad, I knew that God was going to use me further in my life. So in 1860, if you know your history, Abraham Lincoln was elected president. In 1861, in South Carolina, the Civil War broke out. And I was a nurse for the North. The North were the lovers of freedom of all of us. Because of my great knowledge of Maryland, I became a spy and I became a scout. In 1863, it was the Emancipation Proclamation, which was the freeing of all slaves. But many slave owners would not let their slaves go free. They didn't really believe that they had to do it. So you know what we did in the North? We got on ships, and we went down to the plantations, and the slaves were afraid of the white soldiers. But when they saw me, who they called Moses, because I was setting the people free, when they saw me, they would get on the ships. And we would take sometimes as many as 800 slaves on one ship. When I thought of my 19 trips over many, many years, and then compared 300 slaves to one trip of 800, I thought boats are the way to go for sure. Well, 2 years later, the South surrendered. And 1 week later, President Lincoln was killed. In December 1865, the 13th Amendment ended slavery forever. And then after the war, I was one of the people that stood by other great women. I know you've heard their names, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. They stood up for the rights of women. And I spoke time and again for women's rights. At any given time in my house in Auburn, New York, I had 3 to 10 slaves living with me in a cottage. I lived in that old cottage where my mom and dad, Old Rit and Old Ben, lived out their days as free people. I never tired of speaking out about freedom for Negroes and for women. I sold vegetables door to door into my 90s to help folks who are struggling to make it. And then I gave my house with 25 acres to the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church for the sick and the homeless and for slaves who were recently freed in 1903. At the age of 93, in March, I died. I lived a very full, adventurous life. I was born a slave. I was raised a barefoot slave. But I brought thousands out of slavery, and I died a free woman by God's grace. Thank you very much.
And now, if you have any questions, we'd be glad to, if you would address them to either Minty or Harriet, we'd be glad to answer them in first person.
I had a book by Jacob Lawrence is a Seattle native, a black man who did 17 pictures of Harriet Tubman. He died 2 years ago in Seattle. I had the pleasure of meeting him once. This is a first edition book I have up here this week, which you're welcome to look at, but it shows his renditions of Harriet Tubman on the Underground Railroad. If you do not know much about her, I would heartily encourage you to get many, there are many books of hers out these days, and read them with your children, your grandchildren, or just to yourself out loud. Her story is so inspirational, but we will answer questions. Do you have any questions for Minty?
Actually, I read a lot of books, and I've been doing this for a while. So I read a lot of books probably when I was in third grade around then, and my mom put together a thing for me, and because I was only in third grade, you know, my mom kind of did it for me, and I actually did a report on Harriet Tubman as a child and as an adult, and I looked more into her as a child, and ever since I've been doing it. How do historians know about? A lot of people don't, and that's why we do this. I mean, mostly a lot of people that I talk to don't know. I mean, Minty itself is a pretty uncommon name, and nobody knows, associates Minty with Harriet Tubman. So a lot of people don't, and that's why I think that I do it. So historians don't really know, to answer your question.
There is there is history about her, and actually more is being uncovered all the time. About 15 years ago, Harriet Tubman kind of became in vogue. And before that, people didn't ever study her in school at all. But she's become much more famous as probably the main conductor on the Underground Railroad. That's what she's most famous for. But they have constructed history, although they don't know the day she was, they don't know the date she was actually born. Any other questions? She could not read or write, and information came from historians and people that knew about her. She was very famous. In fact, when she bought her house in Auburn, New York, she bought her house from a senator. And the senator said to her, Harriet, I think that someday you will be more famous than I am. And she laughed, and she said, how can you say that? You are a white senator. You are a white man who's a senator. And I have no idea who he was, but I do know Harriet bought the house from him. Well, thank you very much. I have several books about her, and if you want to ask Brenner and I questions in the future, my piece of advice for you is when you're going through tough times in your life, to go get a book on Harriet Tubman, and it helps things kind of get into perspective. And look forward to having you hear more about Sojourner and Florence and Helen and Eleanor Roosevelt. Good evening. Enjoy your popcorn. Look forward to seeing you around camp.